The Obama administration has given every agency marching orders to focus on diversity in federal ranks. Federal News Radio is kicking off a week of reports on diversity in the government by looking first at our women in uniform. Emily Kopp went to the nation's largest conference of women in uniform to learn about how female troops view the recent decision of the administration. She's here to talk about what she found. Emily, it's always good to have you in the studio. Nice to see you.
My pleasure.
This conference, what is it and what was it about?
Well, as you said, it is the biggest gathering of women in the military. Women, about 1,700 are there right now, and they'll be there for the next couple of days at the National Harbor just south of D.C. Women make up 17% of the military, but it's not evenly distributed. And what people were telling me is that, you know, still at some bases in some posts, there are just one or two women. So mm-hmm. This is really an opportunity for them to get together, talk about things, network, and just say kind of, you know, here we are, we're in it together. And even though, you know, it's, every person is treated equally when we go back, there are certain issues that we've been dealing with, and we can talk about it amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. Now, the keynote at the luncheon that I was at was Vice Admiral Bill Gortney, and he's director of the Joint Staff. What he was talking about was, you know, as you talked about in your intro, this notion of diversity at all ranks, recruitment, retention, and promotion, that's something civilian agencies are having to look at too mm-hmm. now. And what he gave was sort of a personal reflection. He started off in the Navy and then he looked out at the crowd and this is what he saw.
We are a significantly better Navy than when I joined. And it is the direct result of the leadership and talent pool women bring to our Navy. And I would never want to go back in time. But what is the correct percentage? And my answer to that one is pretty simple. As many as we can get and retain, and it is a lot more than the number that we have today.
And he kind of gave a recipe for growing the number of women in the military or making it more diverse in general. He said, you know, first of all, we have to recruit more. We have to figure out why people aren't signing up. And tackle those barriers. Then we have to keep the best at certain intervals in their military career where they can jump off. We have to make sure that they stay in. And he said, and the third recipe is to give it time because this is generational. This is mm-hmm. not something that happens overnight.
Now, recently the Pentagon announced that they were going to move women a little closer to the front line, 14,000 positions that are combat in nature. They won't be on the front lines fighting the other guys, but they will be a little bit closer than they have been. Did he talk about that issue at all and how that will look, how that will work?
Actually, he studiously avoided it. I regret to tell you. But he said, you know, that's a controversial issue. He didn't go there in the speech. He talked about growing this bench, making it the most diverse, because the goal is really to get the best people in the best positions. And afterwards, I asked him, okay, so why didn't you give us a little bit more about this big news? Mm-hmm. He said officials are still deliberating how it's going to be done.
There's pros and cons to both sides of the argument. No matter which side of the argument you're on, and ultimately we have to have the discussion so we get to the right answer.
So you can see just by what he said there that there's still a lot of it sounds like a lot of internal discussions that, mm-hmm. that have to go on. It's still quite controversial.
Now you, I imagine, had a chance to talk to a lot of the women at this event and gauge their response to that and some of the other diversity issues. What did you hear from kind of the floor, the rank and file folks?
Yeah, I mean, it was unanimous. The women I spoke with said that this decision is important because women have been doing these things, whether purposely serving on the front line or they just happen to be there mm-hmm. for a long time. And Navy Commander Nicole Shuey, she's president of the organization that puts on the conference, the Sea Service Leadership Association. And she says that, you know, this decision is going to give us legitimacy because right now when women are on those front lines, it's called in support of combat action.
It may be a minor distinction, but internal to the military, it's huge because they are picking up arms alongside their fellow service members. There have been there was a case where there was a woman and a man both in a Humvee, and they were both unfortunately killed by an IED, and the man was classified as combat action and she was classified as in support of combat action. And those kind of things are the things that need to change, because we're doing everything. We're just not getting the same classification.
It also matters in a practical sense, because when you are in combat in the military, that gives you certain advantages when you're talking about career advancement, whether it's promotion or for other job opportunities. So mm-hmm. this opens that up a little bit more to women to be on par with men who do serve in combat. But, you know, I have to tell you, she said that that was not the biggest barrier to women in the military, all things considered.
What is, though, then?
Good question. I was expecting you to ask that. And without fail, what people are saying is that it's those things that are a barrier to women, to particularly to mothers anywhere. You know, finding that work-life balance. Of course, in the military, there are some obvious bigger challenges than for those of us who aren't, you know, deployable at any time. Mm-hmm. I spoke with Navy Lieutenant Megan Donnelly, and she won the Navy Junior Officer Award. She actually got to fly here for a week. Her ship is right now in the Arabian Sea. And she's at this critical point in her career where she's at the end of an aviation commitment of 10 years. It's a point where a lot of people leave the military, and she's weighing whether or not to stay in.
The operational tempo since all of us commissioned and completed flight school has been very high. So people are just, yeah, they're getting a little bit tired and looking to spend some more time at home. A lot of the women are looking to get out and start families because we've looked at the career to this point, and it's been very difficult to look to start a family.
So one key thing about this, you know, I mean, she's talking about she's been in it for 10 years, and a lot of people, men and women, are facing this point in their career because they signed up after September 11th. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about people who were drawn by these terrorist attacks more than 10 years ago to serve, now it's whether or not they're going to find that staying in the military fits with their personal goals and objectives in terms of having a family or other things they want to do.
And age-wise, too, if you think about the average stereotypical recruit, they're coming in at some time between exiting high school and mid to late 20s, 10 years, 11, 12 years later, they're at a station in life that they may feel, either men or women, like time is kind of running out if they want to go into family mode. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what people told me, too.
All right. All this week, you're going to be looking at diversity in the federal workforce. Great report. Thank you very much, Emily Kopp.
My pleasure.
All of the reports that Emily does in this series will be online at federalnewsradio.com/EmilyKopp. You can take our quiz, too. How important is diversity at your agency? It's up on our homepage right now.